Chapter 10. As Istvan III revolved beneath them, the ships of the 63rd Expeditionary Fleet moved with it, following the planet as it turned from the watery sunlight of day and into the leaden darkness of twilight. The ships remained in geostationary orbits, the swarm curled around the world in a loose, iron-fingered grip. As night fell, the burning cities still smouldering from the passage of the firestorm were visible, the glow of the massive pyres sullen and shimmering through the murky cloud. So much ash and fumes had been thrown into the planet's atmosphere that the skies were turning into a shroud of chemical haze. In time, the climate would start to shift, becoming colder as the warmth from the Istvan star was blotted out. If there had been any native flora or fauna remaining, this would have been the death sentence for them. But everything that had evolved to life on Istvan III was already dust and cinders. The fleet kept watch, sensors to the surface in search of any who might have survived the virus bombardment. And with the attention of the other ships elsewhere, it had become possible for the Eisenstein to shift slowly out of formation. Kariya and his crew allowed the frigate to come up from the high anchor station, fading into the press of the other warships. But now they had gone as far as they could without courting suspicion. If Eisenstein were to escape the Istvan system, it would not be by stealth. Master Kariya peered into the hololith tank, looking through the glowing symbols to Garrow, the Lunar Wolf crews, and the other Death Guard warriors. The fingers of Kariya's left hand were mechanical augments, replacements from an accident years earlier when a plasma holdout gun had overloaded in his grip. Inside them were delicate slivers of circuitry that, among other things, allowed him to manipulate the virtual shapes in the tank as if they were real objects. The hololith showed a basic representation of the Istvan system, distorted to present the close orbital space around the third planet in greater detail. Kariya pointed to a stylized cross drifting high up over the star system's ecliptic plane.
Vought has computed a minimum distance vector for us using the ship's cogitator chorus. If we can reach this point, we will be beyond the sea limit and free to make a warp translation.
Naval terminology was never my strong point, grumbled Cruz. Indulge an old war dog and explain it to me in terms a soldier might grasp.
We can't go to the warp while we're still inside the gravity shadow of the sun, said Sendek briskly, indicating the Istvan star. That is the threshold the shipmaster speaks of.
Kariya nodded, a little surprised to find a line Astartes with a basic grasp of astrogation.
Indeed, the footprint of the solar energy interferes with the warp transition. We must go beyond it and reach the jump point in order to enter the immaterium with any degree of safety.
It's a long distance, mused Garrow.
We'll have to travel several light seconds at maximum burn to get there. And, with the drives at full, it will light a torch to show Horus where we're heading.
Cruz leaned into the hololith.
There are capital ships all around. It would only take a couple of them to lay their lances on us and we'd be finished. Somehow, I don't think the War Master will be willing to let us leave unchallenged, eh?
Our void shields are at full capacity, continued Kariya. We can weather a few indirect hits, and we have agility on our side.
Decius gave a humorless chuckle.
While it heartens me to see that the good master here has confidence in his ship and his crew, it must be said that only a fool would not think the odds are stacked high against us.
I don't deny it, retorted the naval officer. Given the circumstances, I rate our chances of survival at 1 in 10. And in that I am being more than generous.
Vought spoke up cautiously.
At this time, Eisenstein is close to the rear edge of the fleet pattern. I took the liberty of informing the fleetmaster's office that we were suffering a malfunction in one of our tertiary fusion generators. It is standard naval procedure for a ship under those circumstances to drop back from the main formation, to prevent other vessels being damaged in case of a cascade failure and core implosion.
How long will that lie last us? Asked Garrow.
Until the moment we fire our main engines, replied the woman.
Cruz made a noise under his breath.
Oh, we can't fight our way out on this little scow, and we can barely run. We may be able to duck and dive, but how far do you think we'll get before one of those monsters...
He stabbed a finger at the large warships flanking them.
Before one of them gets its fangs into our throat.
Not far enough, said Sendek grimly.
Karaya tapped his metal fingers on the control console.
It is true that the Eisenstein lacks the velocity to make it to the jump point clear of any pursuit. That is, if we follow the most direct course.
He traced a straight line from the ship's orbital location to the cross icon. The shipmaster pulled at the course indicator and stretched it in another direction.
Vault has come up with an alternative solution. It is not without risk, but if we succeed, we will be able to outrun the War Master's guns.
Garrow studied the new course plot and smiled at the daring of it.
I concur. This is so ordered.
A bold action, countered Decius, but I must highlight the single large impediment to it.
The Astartes leaned in and pointed at a massive vessel floating off to the port.
That course takes us right across the arc of this ship's engagement zone.
Typhon's command, said Garrow. The Terminus Est.
Kallas Typhon fingered the cutting edge of his man-reaper with bare fingers, letting the keen blade pull at the hardened skin there, drawing faint lines of dark Astartes blood. His mood was a mixture of conflicting polar emotions. On one level, he felt a simmering elation at the unfolding events around him, an anticipation of what great things were coming to pass. Typhon felt liberation, if an Astartes could know such a thing. A cold and cruel joy to know that after so long, after so many years of nurturing and hiding his secret wisdom, he would soon be free to walk openly with it. The things he knew, the words he had read in the book shown to him by his kinsman, Erebus, the enlightenment the word-bearer's chaplain had brought to Kallas Typhon had changed him forever. But Typhon was angry with it. Oh, he knew that his master Mortarion was slowly coming to the same path as he was, thanks to the direction of Horus. But both the Primarch and the War Master were only just starting down that road. Typhon and Erebus and the others, they were the ones who had been truly illuminated, and it chafed at him that he was forced to play the role of dutiful first captain, when in fact it was his knowledge that outstripped theirs. The time would come, Typhon promised himself, and it would be soon, when he would cut loose from Mortarion's shadow and stand alone. With the patronage of darker powers, Typhon would become a herald before which whole worlds would tremble. From his command throne, the Death Guard's gaze ranged across the bridge of the Terminus Est to take in the servants and Astartes toiling in his service. Their loyalty was to him, and it was emboldening. With that, Typhon's thoughts turned to Grulgor. He frowned and rubbed the black stubble of his beard. In the hours since he had sent Ignatius the command to remove Garrow and join the attack on Istvan III, the braggart commander had been uncommonly quiet. Now the bombardment was over and Horus's plan was in a moment of ellipsis, he had paused to reflect. Grulgor was not a man to stay silent about his victories, and Typhon knew that Ignatius would relish the chance to relay the story of how he had murdered Nathaniel Garrow. The commander's powerful dislike for the battle captain had grown into full-fledged hate over the years, as Grulgor used Garrow as a target for his every ill humour and odium. Typhon had no idea where the roots of the enmity had been born, and he did not care. It was Typhon's nature to seek and exploit weakness. The rivalry had become a thing that fueled itself, and Typhon had taken advantage of it. It was easy to use the poison in Grulgor's heart to make him his attack dog, and through Grulgor, the first captain had been able to touch the lodges hidden inside the 14th Legion and guide them as well. He gestured to a chapter serf.
You, check the communications logs. Have there been any machine calls from the frigate Eisenstein?
The servile was back in a moment.
Lord Captain, we show a signal to the fleet command, a message regarding a weapons malfunction, and then another, with reference to an ongoing issue with the ship's power system. The former bears Commander Grugor's authorization.
Nothing else.
The serf bowed low.
No, Lord.
Typhon rose and placed his battle scythe across his bridge throne.
Where is the Eisenstein now?
Moving on a transition vector, Captain,
answered a deck officer.
Port High Quadrant.
Where is he going?
A creeping discontent pushed at Typhon's thoughts.
Vox, hail the Eisenstein and get me a voice link. I want to talk to Grugor now.
Mas listened carefully to the tinny voice in his headset, his opposite number on board the Terminus Est repeating the orders of Captain Typhon with flat, emotionless precision. He had the Vox pickup in his fingers, holding tightly to it, trembling slightly. Mas hazarded a sideways look at Coria, Vought, and the Astartes. They were all engaged in conversation, watching as the frigate made its way along the path that the deck officer had set. Mas licked his lips, the tension making him thirsty. It was still difficult for him to fully grasp the chain of events that had led him to this point. His assignment to the Eisenstein had been recent, and, in his eyes, it had not come soon enough. Years of dogged service aboard armed transports and system boats had finally been rewarded with a promotion to an actual expeditionary fleet. And while the Death Guard's exploits were not as glamorous or renowned as those of other legions, it was a step up for Mars's ambitions. He coveted command, and there wasn't a day that passed when he didn't think of a future where it would be Shipmaster Tirin Mas at the throne of a cruiser, running a vessel like his own private kingdom. Now, all of that was in danger of crumbling away. The posting he had been so euphoric to be granted was turning into a millstone around his neck. First, this high-handed Garrow had taken command and set things awry, and now Coria himself was following the fool's insane orders. If what he had gleaned was true, this Death Guard had already murdered several of his own, allowed another turncoat to escape destruction, and willfully destroyed a dozen fighters. Mars felt as if he was the only sighted man in a room full of blind people. He looked around the bridge for any glimmer of expression on the faces of the other officers, anything at all that might have shown him they felt as he did. But there was nothing. Coria and his arrogant executive had them all playing along. It was inconceivable. The shipmaster had defied the decrees of Horus himself, and then Vought had compounded things with her falsification of signals. Mas had tried to reason with Coria, and what had he got in return? Censure and violent reproach. He shook his head. The Vox officer felt soiled by the willing piracy unfolding before him. They had sworn an oath to the fleet, and Horus was at the head of that fleet. What did it matter if the orders the War Master gave were distasteful? A good captain did not question, he served. But Tirin Mas would never get to do that now. Not after Coria's rebellion. Should he survive, Mas would be tarred with the same brush as the shipmaster, labelled disloyal and doubtless executed. The young man stared at the Vox unit. He had to take steps. Already he had broken protocol and secretly disabled the enunciator circuits so that the bridge would not be alerted to incoming signals unless he wished it. That alone was a flogging offence, but Mars saw it was necessary. It was clear that he could only trust himself, and that meant he alone bore the responsibility to warn the rest of the fleet of the duplicity brewing aboard the Eisenstein. He raised the communicator to his lips and drew back into the Vox alcove. Mas was afraid, that was undeniable, but as he began to speak in a careful whisper, a sense of purpose and strength came to him. When this was done, he would have the gratitude of Horus himself. Perhaps if Eisenstein wasn't destroyed as an object lesson after the rebellion had been put down, he might even solicit the War Master for command of the ship. as his reward.
"Repeat yourself,"
demanded Typhon. He loomed over the chapter serf at the Vox console, the broad form of his armour dark and menacing. The helot bowed.
"Lord, the message comes from a person claiming to be Eisenstein's communications officer. He says that Grulgor is missing and that the ship's command crew are in revolt. He claims treachery, sir."
The first captain rocked back, and in his mind the pieces of an unwelcome picture fell into place.
"The bellicose idiot failed me. He tipped our hand to Garu."
Typhon spun in place and barked out orders to the ship's crew.
"Sound general quarters! Power to the drives and the prow lances! I want an intercept course to Eisenstein, and I want it now!"
"Captain, the Vox officer," said the serf. "What shall I tell him?"
Typhon smiled grimly.
"Send him my gratitude and the commiserations of the War Master. Then get me a link to Maloghurst aboard the Vengeful Spirit."
Garu saw the brief flicker of fear on Kariah's face as the sing-song siren call blared from the forward command console. Vought was already at the station, punching control strings into the keyboard.
"Report,"
said the shipmaster. Vought paled.
"Sense servitors are registering a distant thermal bloom emanating from the drive blocks of Terminus Est, sir. In addition, there are readings of possible bow configuration changes in line with lance battery deployment."
"He knows," snapped Cruz. "Warp curse him.
Typhon knows."
"Aye," agreed Garrow, facing Kariah. "It's time. Give the order."
The naval officer swallowed hard and threw a nod to Vought.
"You heard the battle captain. All decks to combat stations, release drive interlocks and make for maximum military speed."
He gestured to a junior rating.
"Get below and alert the esteemed Severnaya to prepare himself for the jump. I want him ready to go."
Kariah saw the question in Garrow's look.
"Severnaya, the navigator," he explained, pointing at the deck. "Two tiers below us, spends his days meditating inside a null G-sphere. I'll warrant he doesn't have the slightest idea what's going on up here. He lives only for the thrill of the jump, you see."
Garrow accepted this.
"The warp is stormy. Do you think he will balk to enter it when your order comes?"
"Oh, he'll go all right," said Kariah. "But what I fear is whether he will survive the leap."
Vought broke into the conversation.
"What about the gun battery, sir?"
she asked, her voice taut with tension.
Kariah shook his head. "Make them ready, but I want all available power to be on hand for the void shields and the engine clusters. What we need is strength and speed, not firepower."
"Aye, sir. All ahead full,"
she replied, and went to work implementing the orders. Garrow felt a faint shudder through the soles of his boots as the frigate's decking trembled with the abrupt application of velocity. Chimes and bells from the engineering relays sounded as Eisenstein went instantly from a stately drifting course to a full battle pace.
"Terminus Est is moving from her orbital station,"
said Zendek, reading the data from a picked screen repeater.
"Turning now, swinging guns to our bearing."
"Any other ships following suit?"
asked Garrow.
"I don't see them, Lord," he replied. "Only Typhon."
"Captain Garrow," Vought called. "We have no records of the warship's capabilities. What can Typhon field against us?"
"Sir, if I may," broke in Zendek. "Terminus Est is a unique craft, not of a standard template construction pattern. Well armoured, but ponderous with it, and very burdensome on the turns."
Kariah nodded.
"That we can play to our advantage." "Indeed. Her forward armament is formidable, however. Typhon has an array of bow-mounted lances and more in turrets that prey abeam and ahead. If he pulls alongside us, we're finished,"
he concluded grimly.
"We'll keep the behemoth out of our baffles, then,"
said the shipmaster.
"Watch the reactor temperatures."
"How did he guess?"
Decius snarled at his commander.
"Could it not be a coincidence? Perhaps he is only taking the ship to another orbit."
"He knows,"
Garrow repeated Sendek's words.
"This was inevitable."
"But how?"
demanded the younger Astartes.
"Did he have a seer pluck your intentions from the ether?"
Garrow's eyes strayed to the Vox alcove and met those of the man cowering there, his face pale and sweaty.
"Nothing so arcane,"
said the battle captain, reading the truth in the naval officer's expression. In three swift steps he was across the bridge chamber and dragging Mass to his feet. The Vox officer appeared to have been crying.
"You," growled Garrow, his eyes turning flinty. "You alerted Typhon."
Hanging there in his grip, Mass suddenly jerked and flailed at Garrow, weak blows rebounding off his power armor.
"Traitor bastard!" he shouted. "You're all conspirators! You've killed us with your duplicity!"
"Fool!" Kariah retorted. "These are the Emperor's men! It's you that's the traitor, you arrogant dolt!"
"My oath is to the fleet! I serve the War Master Horus!"
Mass bellowed as he started to weep.
"Until death!"
"Yes," agreed Garrow.
And with a savage twist of his wrist, the Death Guard broke the Vox officer's neck and let him drop to the floor. There was only a breath of silence after the killing before Vought's voice called out across the bridge,
"Lance, discharge, port rear quadrant! We're under attack!"
The crew turned their faces away from the viewports as a dazzling sword of white light crossed over the frigate's bow. The shot was a miss, but the edges of the Lance's energy nimbus crackled over the exterior hull. On the bridge, a handful of stations flickered and popped as the backwash raced through the control systems.
"I think he wants us to heave to," muttered Cruz.
"A request so politely phrased as well," said Sendek. "We'll show him our exhausts by way of reply."
"Look sharp,"
snapped Garrow, turning away from the man he had just executed.
"Warn Haker and the others to be ready for impacts and decompression. I want those civilians kept alive."
The next shot was a hit. At the periphery of its range, the lance fire from the Terminus Est was at its weakest, and yet the collimated beams of energy were still enough to inflict serious damage on a ship with the tonnage of Eisenstein. The bolts cut through the void shields and sent them flickering. They raked over the dorsal hull at an oblique angle that tore decks open to space and ripped several portside gun turrets from their mountings. Puffs of gas and flame popped and faded. Cascade discharges vaulted down the corridors of the frigate, blowing out relays and setting combustion. In a single secondary explosion, an entire compartment on one of the tertiary tiers became a brief, murderous firestorm as stored breathing gas canisters ignited. A handful of Garrow's men, left there to stand guard, died first, as the air in their lungs turned to flames. The backdraft flooded over their bodies, torching the living quarters and sanctum of Eisenstein's small astropathic choir. Safety hatches slammed shut, but the damage was done, and with no more air to burn, the chambers became dead voids of blackened metal and ruined flesh. Some of the impact transferred into kinetic energy that staggered the ship and made it list. But Kariah's officers were battle-hardened, and they did not let it turn them from their course. Terminus Est was moving upon them, the massive battleship filling the rearward picked screens with its deadly bulk.
"An explanation, Typhon," growled Malaghurst over the crackling Voxlink. "I await an explanation as to why you saw fit to draw me from my duties during this most important of operations."
The first captain grimaced, glad he did not have to look the War Master's equerry in the eye. There was no great esteem held between the son of Horus and the Death Guard, a holdover from an incident years earlier when they had disagreed fiercely over a matter of battlefield protocol. Typhon disliked the man's insouciant manner and his barely restrained arrogance. That Malaghurst was known by the epithet the Twisted was, in Typhon's opinion, an all too accurate description.
"Forgive me, equerry," he retorted. "But I thought it important you be informed that your Primarch's grand plans are in danger of faltering."
"Don't test my patience, Death Guard. Shall I call your Primarch to the Vox to have him chastise you instead? Your ship has left the formation. What are you doing?"
"Attempting to excise an irritant. I have received warning that one of my battle brothers, the lamentably conservative Captain Garrow, has taken control of a frigate called the Eisenstein and even now attempts to flee the Istvan system."
He leaned back in his command throne.
"Is that matter enough for your attention, or should I address myself directly to Horus instead?"
"Garrow,"
repeated Malachurst.
It was my understanding that Mortarion had dealt with him.
Typhon snorted.
The Death Lord has been too lenient. Garrow should have been allowed to die of his wounds after the battle on Istvan Extremis. Instead, Mortarion hoped to turn him, and now we may pay for that folly.
Malachurst was silent for a moment. Typhon could imagine his unpleasant face creased in thought.
Where is he now?
I am pursuing the Eisenstein. I will destroy the ship if I can.
The equerry sniffed archly.
Where does Garrow think he can go? The storms in the warp have grown fiercer with every passing hour. A small vessel like that cannot hope to weather a journey through the Immaterium. He'll be torn apart.
Perhaps, admitted Typhon, but I would like to make sure.
I have your course on my data slate, said the other Astartes. You'll never catch him in that cumbersome barge of yours. He has too much distance on you.
I don't need to catch him, Malachurst. I just need to wound him.
Then do it, Typhon,
came the reply.
If I am forced to inform Horus that word of his plans has been spread unchecked, it will be you who feels his displeasure soon after I do.
The first captain made a throat-cutting gesture, and his vox attendants severed the connection. He glanced down from his command throne to where the shipmaster of the Terminus Est was bowed and waiting. The man spoke.
Lord Typhon, the Eisenstein has altered her course. It's travelling at full burn towards Istvan III's satellite, the White Moon.
Come to a new heading, snapped Typhon, rising once more. Match Eisenstein's course and get me a firing solution.
The shipmaster faltered.
Lord, the moon's gravity well...
That was not a request, he growled.
Still with us?
Vought read the distance vectors from a picked screen.
Aspect change confirmed. Terminus Est is following. No other signs of pursuit.
Just so, said Kariah. Continue on a zigzag heading. Don't make it easy for Typhon's gunners to get a firing angle.
Garrow stood directly behind the shipmaster, looking over his head and out of the viewports. The stark, chalk-coloured surface of Istvan III's largest moon steadily grew larger as he watched it, craters and mountains taking shape on the airless surface. To an untrained observer, it might have seemed like the frigate was on a collision course.
Be honest with me.
Garrow spoke quietly, so only Kariah could hear him.
What chance is there that Vought's computations will be in error?
The dark-skinned man glanced up at him.
She's very good, Captain. The only reason she hasn't been given a ship of her own is because she has a few issues with fleet authority. I have faith in her.
Garrow looked back at the moon.
My faith is in the strength of a starship's hull and the power of gravity, he replied.
But even as he said the words, they seemed hollow and incomplete. Kariah eyed him curiously. Perhaps he sensed the captain's disquiet.
The universe is vast, sir. One can find faith in many places.
Coming up to first course correction,
called the deck officer.
Stand by for emergency manoeuvres.
Mark, said a servitor in a toneless voice. Executing manoeuvre. The frigate's deck yawed, and Garrow felt the motion in the pit of his stomach. With all the available energy channeling into the drives, the ship's gravitational compensators were lagging behind, and he felt the turn more distinctly than usual. He gripped a support stanchion with one hand and put his weight on his organic leg.
Thermal bloom from their bow, warned Sendek, having taken it upon himself to assist the bridge crew at the sensor pulpit.
Discharge! Incoming fire, multiple lance bolts! Push the turn!
Shouted Kariah. He said something else, but the words were drowned out as heavy rods of tuned energy struck the aft of the Eisenstein and pitched her forward like a ship cresting a wave. The compensators were slow again, and Garrow's arm shot out and grabbed the shipmaster, halting his fall towards a console. The battle captain felt something in Kariah's wrist dislocate.
Engine 3, power levels dropping, shouted Vought. Coolant leaks on decks 9 and 7.
Kariah recovered and nodded to Garrow.
Increase thrust from the other nozzles to compensate. We can't let them gain any ground.
The ship was trembling, the throbbing vibration of a machine pushed to the edge of its operating limit.
Sendek called out from his station, "We're entering the White Moon's gravity well, Captain! Accelerating!"
Karaya gasped as he snapped his augmetic hand back into place.
"Ah, the point of no return, Garrow," he said. "Now we'll see if Rassel is as good as I said she was. If her calculations are off by more than a few degrees, we will be nothing but a new crater and a scattering of metal shavings,"
Decius said darkly. The moon filled the forward viewport.
"Have faith," Garrow replied.
"Lord, we have been captured by the lunar gravitational pull,"
reported Typhon Shipmaster. "Our velocity is increasing. I would humbly suggest we attempt to evade and..."
"If we break contact now, the Eisenstein escapes," the first captain said flatly. "This vessel has power enough to pull free, yes? You'll use it when I order you to, and not before."
"By your command."
Typhon glared at the gunnery officer.
"You! Where are my kills? I want that frigate obliterated. Get it done."
"Lord, the ship is agile and our cannons are largely fixed emplacements."
"Results, not excuses," came the growling retort. "Do your duty, or I'll find a man who can."
On the giant picked screen over his command throne, Typhon watched the trails of fumes and wreckage spilling from Eisenstein and smiled coldly. Rassel Vought blinked sweat out of her eyes and pressed her hands on the flat panel of the control console. The reflected ivory starlight from the White Moon's surface illuminated the bridge with stark edges and hard lines. It was a funerary glow, devoid of any life, and it seemed to draw her energy from her. She took a shuddering breath. The lives of every person aboard the frigate were squarely in her hands at this moment, gambled on a string of numbers she had hastily computed while Istvan III had died before her eyes. She was afraid to look at them again for fear that she might find she had made some horrible mistake. Better that she not know. Better she hang on to the fragile thread of confidence that had propelled her to this daring course in the first place. If Vought had made any miscalculations, she would not live to regret it. The theory was sound, she could be sure of that. The gravity of the dense, iron-heavy White Moon was already enveloping the Eisenstein, dragging it down towards the satellite's craggy surface. If she did not intervene, it would do exactly that, and, like the Dua Death Guard had said, the frigate would become a grave marker. Vought's plan was built on the mathematics of orbits and the physics of gravitation, a school of learning that extended back to the very first steps of mankind into space, when thrust and fuel were precious commodities. In the 31st millennium, with brute force engines capable of throwing starships wherever they needed to go, it wasn't often such knowledge was required, but today it might save their lives. Rassel glanced over her shoulder and found both Barrick and the Death Guard battle captain looking back at her. She expected judgmental, commanding stares from both men, but instead there was silent assurance in their eyes. They were trusting her to fulfill her promise. She gave them an answering nod and went back to her task. Klaxons warned of new salvos of incoming fire. She tuned them out of her thoughts, concentrating instead on the complex plots of trajectory and flight path before her. There was no margin for error. As Eisenstein fell towards the planetoid, the drives would shift and ease her through the White Moon's gravitational envelope, using the energy of the satellite to throw the frigate about in a slingshot arc, boosting the vessel's sublight speed, projecting her away towards the jump point. The Terminus Est would never be able to catch them. The frigate's shuddering grew as the craft entered the final vector of the slingshot course.
"Prepare for course correction!"
Vought shouted over the rumbling.
"Mark!"
Streaks of fire jetted from the Eisenstein's port flank as the autonomic trim controls slewed the ship away from the moon. The bow veered as if wrenched by an invisible hand, shifting the axis with brutal force. The extremes of tension between the lunar gravity and the artificial G-forces generated inside the vessel knotted and turned. Hull plates popped and warped as rivets as big as a man sheared off and broke. Conduits stressed beyond their tolerances ruptured and spewed toxic fumes.
forced past her limits. Eisenstein howled like a wounded animal under the punishment. But it turned, meter by agonizing meter, falling into the small corridor of orbital space that would propel the frigate away from Istvan III.
Typhon!
Shouted the shipmaster, throwing procedure aside by daring to address the first captain without the prefix of his rank.
We must evade! We cannot follow the frigate's course! We'll be drawn down onto the moon! Our mass is too great!
Furious, the Death Guard struck the naval officer with a sudden backhand, battering the man to the decking with his cheekbone shattered and blood streaming from cuts.
Evade, then, he spat. But warp, curse you! I want everything thrown at that bloody ship before we let him go.
The rest of the bridge crew scrambled to carry out his orders, leaving the mewling shipmaster to tend to himself. Typhon snatched up his man-reaper and held it tightly, his anger hot and deadly. He cursed Garrow as the Eisenstein slipped out of his grasp. The Terminus Est bore down, the warship's drives casting a halo of crackling red light, a shark snapping at a minnow. The craft groaned as the monstrous thrust of her drives tore the ship out of the White Moon's gravity well, the blade-sharp prow crossing the path of the frigate. As it did so, every lance cannon on Typhon's battlecruiser erupted as one, in a screaming concert of power, tearing across the dark towards the fleeing vessel.
"Incoming fire!" barked Sendek. "Brace for impact!"
Garrow heard the words, and then suddenly he was airborne, the deck dropping away from him. The Death Guard spun and tumbled across the bridge, rebounding off stanchions and clipping the ceiling before the energy of the slamming impact dissipated, and he collided with a control console. Nathaniel shook off a daze and dragged himself back to his feet. Small fires were burning here and there as servitors struggled to bring the bridge back to any semblance of order. He saw Kariah sprawled over the command throne, with Vought at his side. The woman had a severe cut across her scalp, but she seemed to be unaware of the streaks of blood down her cheek. Dimly he heard Eacton Cruz swear in Chthonian as he climbed off the deck.
"Report," Garrow commanded,
the rough metallic smoke that hazed the air tasting acrid on his tongue. Sendek called out from the other side of the chamber,
"Terminus Est has broken off pursuit! But that last salvo hit us hard. Several decks vented to space. Drive reactors are in flux. Engines are verging on critical shutdown."
He paused.
"Slingshot maneuver was successful. On course for intercept with jump point."
Decius grunted as he pushed aside a fallen section of panelling and stepped over the lifeless body of a naval rating.
"What good is that if we explode before we get there?"
Garrow ignored him and moved to Kariah's side.
"Is he alive?"
Vought nodded.
"Just stunned, I think."
The shipmaster waved them off.
"I can stand on my own. Get away."
Garrow disregarded the man's complaints and pulled him to his feet.
"Decius, call the apothecary to the bridge."
Kariah shook his head.
"No, not yet. We're not finished here, not by a long shot."
He staggered forward.
"Rassel, what's the navigator's status?"
Vought cringed as she listened to a Vox headset. Even at a distance, Garrow could hear yelling and shouting from the tinny speaker.
"Sevenaya is still alive, but his adjutants are panicking. They're climbing the walls down there. They're weeping about the warp. I can hear them screaming about darkness and storms." "If he's not dead, then he can still do his job,"
Kariah said grimly, chewing down his pain.
"That goes for all of us."
"Aye," said Garrow. "Order the crew to make the preparations for warp translation. We will not have a second chance at this."
"We may not have the first chance," grumbled Decius beneath his breath. Garrow turned on him, and his face hardened.
"Brother, I have reached my bounds with your doleful conduct. If you have nothing else to volunteer but that, I will have you go below and join the damage control parties."
"I call it as I see it," retorted Decius. "You said you wanted the truth from me, Captain."
"I would have you keep your comments to yourself until we are away, Decius."
Nathaniel expected the younger Astartes to back down, but instead Decius stepped closer, moderating his tone so that he would not carry further.
I will not. This course you have set us upon is suicide, sir. As surely as if you had bared our throats to Typhon's scythe. He stabbed a finger at Vought. You heard the woman. The navigator is barely sane with the terror of what you ask of him. I know you have not been deaf to the reports of the turbulence in the warp in recent days. A dozen ships were displaced just on the voyage to Istvan.
That is rumour and hearsay,
Cruz snapped, coming closer.
Are you sure?
Decius pressed. They say the warp has turned black with tempests and the freakish things that lurk within them.
And here we sit, on a ship held together by rust and hope, with intent to dive into that ocean of madness.
Garrow hesitated. There was truth in Decius's words. He was aware of the talk circulating about the fleet before the attack on the Coral City, that there had been isolated incidents of navigators and astropaths going wild with panic when their minds stroked the immaterium. The Sea of Warp Space was always a chaotic and dangerous realm through which to travel, but so the reports had hinted, it was rapidly becoming impassable.
"We have already tested ourselves and this ship beyond all rational margins," hissed Decius. "If we touch the warp, it will be a step too far. We will not endure a blind voyage into the Empyrean."
The skin on the back of Garrow's neck prickled. The innate danger sense that was second nature to an Astartes sounded in him, and he turned towards the bridge's main hatch. Standing in the doorway, wreathed in thin grey smoke, the woman Keela was watching him. The battle captain blinked, for one moment afraid that reason had fled from him and she was some kind of ephemeral vision. But then he realized that Decius saw her too. Keela picked her way through the wreckage and came to stand directly in front of him.
"Nathaniel Garrow, I came because I know you need help. Will you accept it?"
"You're just a remembrancer," said Decius.
But even his bluster was waning before her quiet, potent presence. "What help can you offer?"
"You'll be surprised," murmured Cruz.
"The survival of this ship is measured in moments," she continued. "And if we remain in this place, we will surely die. We must all take a leap of faith, Nathaniel. If we trust in the will of the Emperor, we will find salvation."
"What you ask of him is blind belief in phantoms," Decius argued. "You cannot know we will survive."
"I can."
Keela's reply was quiet, but filled with such complete certainty that the Astartes were given pause by it. From the forward consoles, Vought called out,
"Captain, the ship's Gellerfield will not stabilize. Perhaps we should abort the warp jump. If we enter the immaterium, it may fail completely and the ship will be unprotected."
"You have only one choice, Nathaniel," said Keela softly.
"There will be no abort, deck officer."
Garrow watched the shock unfold on Decius's face as he spoke.
"Take us in,"